I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
A ticket to ride or a pass to park. The lifetime perk with taxpayers picking up the tab. How many people are eligible and why some say the practice should be kicked to the curb. Good evening. Imagine the idea of never having to pay again. Sounds like a dream in a city as pricey as Toronto, and for some, it's a reality.
Various board members and long-serving workers getting to keep their wallets in their pockets. CTV's John Woodward is live with more. And John, you've been looking into how this works.
Nathan, some say this is a practice that rewards years of dedicated service. Others say it's time to end a taxpayer-funded perk.
Every time someone uses a digital parking meter or locks their bike at a stand where a parking meter once stood, they should think of Alan Heisey.
And the real revolution in that equipment, the on-street pan display equipment, was that it was solar-powered and connected to the internet, which was something brand new 20 years ago.
Heisey was the chair of the Toronto Parking Authority for 6 years and oversaw those and other major changes as the city amalgamated.
The then chairman or president of the parking authority told me that the board had voted me to get a parking pass because of what, and I appreciated it because it was kind of a recognition for what I'd done.
Many other Toronto Parking Authority board members were granted lifetime passes before the practice came to a halt after a review by City Hall a few years ago. That saved more than $100,000 a year. Five former board members, including Heisey, whose passes were considered a reward for service, kept them. Current board members also get an annual pass while they serve. So do all city councillors, except the six who have declined them. Even though they don't need it to get to meetings, right now they're mostly held over Zoom.
I think that if you are currently working for the city and if you're doing a job where you need access to parking on a near daily basis, that's perhaps understandable. But there needs to be very clear guidelines about who should be getting these passes. And if you're not using it on a near regular basis, odds are you shouldn't be getting one at all.
As for its employees, the TPA has given 69 of them lifetime passes after 20 years of service. The TTC also gives lifetime transit passes to longtime employees. In 2017, there were almost 6,000 people with the pass. And Toronto Zoo has given out 150 zoo passes to longtime employees since 2006.
I think it's too entitled. Just because you work for them, you shouldn't have free parking for the rest of your life.
Personally, I think that's fair. If that's, I mean, any job that you work, you'd have perks.
I'm lucky to have the pass, and I'm grateful that the city has decided to continue to let me have it.
Even if these days he rides a bicycle much more often.
As people are out driving more, the Toronto Parking Authority estimates the cost of all of these free parking passes together will add up to more than $200,000. Of those, the lifetime passes will cost about $15,000 taxpayer dollars a year. Reporting live from Queen Street, I'm John Woodward. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, John. Just ahead, why your next trip to the barber or nail salon could cost you more. The cost being passed down to customers at businesses where economic survival is still a close shave for many.
But first to the public safety alert in a Scarborough neighborhood. Concerns over a man in a vehicle approaching teenage girls.
There are schools in the area and police are stepping up their search. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live near Birchmount and Danforth with more on this. Beth.
Michelle, we saw several police officers driving around the plaza here today, keeping an extra eye on things. One of the nearby schools says one of the incidents happened here and students reported it to staff.
At Birchmount Road and Danforth Road, 12-year-old girls are talking about the man and the suspicious vehicle.
Don't go with them. Like, you don't know what bad things could happen.
It's just very dangerous, I think. And you just shouldn't go with him.
Toronto police put out this image. They say a man driving an older, light-colored SUV has been striking up a conversation with teenage girls, then tries to get them into his vehicle, and that it's happened multiple times over the past 2 months.
She told me she was scared. She was shaking.
Lorena Starback says her friend is one of the girls who encountered the man.
My mom told me, like, to stay in a group of friends, and if anything happens, to scream and run. And my teacher told me if anything like that happens to go somewhere where we know the person, like Pizza Hut, Sam's, anywhere we know.
Nearby Danforth Gardens Public School says during lunch Friday, two students reported being approached in the plaza. The man offered the students a ride and proceeded to follow them in his car after they ran away, said a letter to families. It and J.G. Workman Public School just across from the plaza have both sent out warnings with street safety tips. Among them, always walk with a buddy to and from school, always tell your parents where you are, and if someone grabs you, scream and run. Messaging parents are reinforcing with their kids.
I'm going to be more suspicious now, and I'm going to talk to my 16-year-old daughter about the things happening.
Police say they have an increased presence in the area and are looking at surveillance video to learn more about the man, the vehicle, and reassure the community. Police describe the man in his 40s to 50s with an accent. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Beth. A renewed message from Toronto Police to the teenager wanted in connection with the killing of a taxi driver.
I want to speak directly to Mr. Twyman. I want to tell him that now is the time to arrange a surrender and end the uncertainty for the family.
The suspect, Isaiah Twyman, is just 17 years old, but police have obtained judicial authorization to identify him. He's wanted for second-degree murder in relation to the shooting death of 73-year-old Christopher Young, a Beck taxi driver. Young was killed inside his cab on the evening of October 24th near Pharmacy in Eglinton. Police have not released a possible motive, but say Twyman is considered armed and dangerous.
Turning next to the pandemic and Ontario's trajectory in the fight against COVID-19.
Is it going in the right direction? Recent case counts are up, but the province says there's no cause for alarm. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Well, tonight, even the science advisory table, Nathan, is saying there's nothing to panic here, but they're saying that the fourth wave has gone from being flat to now starting to see a slight increase.
2 weeks after Ontario lifted capacity limits on restaurants and gyms, and the province seems to have been knocked off of its pandemic plateau. The seven-day average of new cases is slowly rising, along with it, the questions about what this could all mean.
Right now, we have a doubling time of 17 days, meaning if this continues like that, 500 cases per day right now on average will become about 1,000 cases per day in about 2.5 weeks from now.
At least one region has already taken action. In Sudbury, which recorded the highest number of cases province-wide today, health officials introduced a circuit breaker, bringing back some capacity limits, physical distancing, and stronger proof of vaccination requirements. According to the Minister of Health, though, the rise is not unexpected.
We anticipated that that would happen. Dr. Moore anticipated that would happen. And so what we're seeing right now are largely regional outbreaks, which we're going to be dealing with regionally.
The question now, where does Ontario go from here? Specialists in infectious diseases say while hospitalizations aren't up, cases are always an early indicator of what is to come. Still, most agree that local measures are the way to go.
Nobody wants to go back into a strict full lockdown where everything is restricted. It makes a lot of sense to look at where your cases are coming from and try to tailor towards that.
Even the science advisory table says while there is no reason to panic, small changes in behavior could stabilize the trend.
Think about, do I really need to work in the office downtown or can I work from home? When I look at sports arenas, loads of people don't wear their masks. A lot of restaurants were so crowded. Do I really want to go inside into a really crowded restaurant, etc.?
The Ford government has indicated that province-wide lockdowns are a thing of the past, that more regional restrictions driven by local medical officers of health will be how the province fights the pandemic. But the province is also planning to remove masking and proof of vaccination requirements over the next 4.5 months, a strategy the government is sticking to.
We do know that there are going to be increases in cases as the weather turns colder, and that has been brought into the equation when we figured out the plan in the first place.
The government says it will re-examine the plan, but only after the winter holidays.
And the province's current pandemic plan would see the proof of vaccination requirements lifted province-wide in mid-January, while masking would come to an end on March 28th. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. As for tonight, Public Health Ontario is reporting 441 new cases in its most recent update. 268 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 19,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is now sitting at 3.1%.
456 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to more than 590,000 over the course of the pandemic. Three additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,903 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 55 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 30 in York Region, 17 in Durham. There are 15 new cases in Peel, with 14 in Hamilton. Niagara logged 12 new cases, and there are 10 in Halton Region.
Ontario is already offering COVID-19 booster shots to some groups today. Health Canada gave its stamp of approval for a third dose of the Pfizer vaccine. It's being authorized for people over 18. The booster is identical to the regular Pfizer shot, and it's to be given at least 6 months after the first two vaccine doses. Ontario is looking at expanding booster shots to all adults in early 2022. That's based on a 6 to 8 month interval after the second dose. Moderna has also applied to Health Canada to approve its third dose.
88.5% of eligible people in Ontario have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and more than 85.1% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents nearly 11.1 million people in Ontario.
You'll need the umbrella if you're heading out tonight. Jessica Smith is here with a look at the current conditions. Jessica.
The rain really does continue as we head towards the overnight hours. The good news, the system moves pretty quickly, so it won't really carry us in to the day tomorrow. But this line of showers continues to stretch right across the kind of northern shores of Lake Ontario, and it stretches quite far as well. This line stretches down towards Windsor and really reaches all the way across towards areas through Kingston. So everyone's seeing a little bit of active weather as we head throughout the rest of our evening. Temperature-wise, though, we remain above seasonal as we head into the beginning of our night and through areas in and around Toronto Island and Pearson Airport, around 10 to 11 degrees. So not too bad, all things considered. More up after the break. Michelle?
Thank you, Jessica. And just about everywhere you look these days, prices are going up. Supply chain issues and inflation not helping businesses still struggling to recover from the last 20 months.
The newest example, perhaps your local barbershop or beauty salon. CTV's John Musselman reports.
At the Upper Village Spa in Eglinton, owner Tarina Solano says clients are slowly coming back for pedicures, manicures, and facials. Still, she says there's a long way to go before business returns to normal. Solano is also dealing with inflation and a jump in her business costs.
Brokerage fees have gone up. We bring things in from different parts of the world, including the U.S., so that's definitely an added cost.
It means businesses like hers have had to increase prices between 5% and 7% just to make ends meet.
So prices started going up for us with our suppliers, actually during COVID for sure. And we just put our prices up just a little bit. We need to, or we're not going to survive.
It's a similar story at this hair salon. Owner Aragus Tafilica says suppliers started charging more for just about every product he offers.
The cost increase, the supplies, every shampoos and conditioners, everything that we use, everything went up. I would say at least by like 10%.
Tafilica diversified his business during COVID and opened an espresso bar in the back to generate more revenue. He says most customers understand why they are paying a bit more. Wellesley Hamilton is a regular customer.
The price increases are a bit difficult to swallow at times. That being said, especially in terms of, coming to the hair salon, I wasn't here for, almost 2 years, and that was a big hit to, their business.
Hamilton says having talented staff back on the job is worth every penny, even if it costs a bit more when she walks out the door. John Musselman, CTV News.
Meanwhile, the city of Toronto is looking to help some of those small businesses in the form of a tax break.
But will that relief actually trickle down to those who need it most? It's not so easy. CTV's Sean Leithong is live with more. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, Mayor Tory bringing this up at council today, and the motion was adopted, but there are some businesses who are fearful that this may not trickle down to them.
City Hall is reaching out to help small business bounce back from the pandemic by cutting taxes next year.
Small businesses are the backbone of our main streets and our neighborhoods. If they don't come back strong, then our city can't come back strong.
The motion adopted in council today will see a 15% reduction in property taxes for small business. The move will help an estimated 25,000 businesses, or 60% of commercial properties in the city.
This helps the smaller businesses, which need it the most.
Along Ossington Avenue, the high concentration of independent businesses are hopeful that this will help them.
I think it's an encouraging sounding plan. I don't know any of the details, but 15% is a lot over the course of 12 months.
Ian Gillies, owner of Telegram Prints and Framing, says they've been fortunate to weather the storm, so this will certainly help. Down the street at Reposado Bar and Lounge, owner Sandy McFadgen is expanding his patio to help keep up capacity.
Anything helps. I mean, this is a tough business at the best of times.
Some of the businesses along this street are wondering if this tax break will make its way to them because they don't own their property, they rent.
There would have to be a mechanism for all the landlords to trickle that money down to the actual business owners.
In council today, Mayor Tory said that he would be willing to ask the province to pass legislation that would ensure the tax relief made its way to the businesses that need it most, something McFadgen is hopeful for.
They base those business taxes on the property values, and they just keep going up every year.
The city says that in some cases, this tax break could save some businesses over $8,000 per year.
Another element that Mayor Tory will introduce in council tomorrow is the idea of keeping Cafe TO around, as these patios we've seen over the pandemic, they're hoping will stay for a long time to come. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Elementary students in Toronto's Catholic District School Board will be getting report cards with fewer details this year. It's the result of an ongoing work to rule campaign by the board's teachers. In addition to the scaled down report cards, they're also not holding parent-teacher interviews or participating in some extracurricular activities. The board claims the Elementary Catholic Teachers Union has escalated their demands at the bargaining table.
We've been without a contract since 2019. And our teachers continue to deliver an excellent program to the students. The better question to ask is, why is the school board being so reluctant to provide my teachers with a fair and equitable collective agreement?
Meantime, Ontario Education Minister Stephen Lecce released a statement which reads in part, enough is enough. We owe it to students to put them first, which is why I'm calling on the union to immediately reinstate these basic services that students and parents deserve.
In Brantford, the search for unmarked graves has begun at the site of what was Canada's largest running residential school.
The search will cover about 200 hectares at what used to be the Mohawk Institute.
Today we're here to begin the search for more truth that will not only extend to more, that will extend to more education and awareness, and will hopefully bring some closure for families and communities who have been missing their loved ones for so long.
Members of the Six Nations of the Grand River and its police service have been trained using ground-penetrating radar machines. Their work started today, with the first phase focusing on land where the school stands. It opened in 1828 and closed in 1971. They'll also be guided by first-hand knowledge of survivors who attended the school. A search for missing children at the site of a former residential school in Saskatchewan began yesterday.
More than a dozen lawsuits have been filed so far following the death of eight people at an outdoor music festival in Houston last week. Drake performed at the show and is among those being sued. The Toronto rapper wrote on Instagram last night, "I've spent the past few days trying to wrap my mind around this devastating tragedy. I hate resorting to this platform to express an emotion as delicate as grief, but this is where I find myself. My heart is broken for the families and friends of those who lost their lives. And for anyone who is suffering, I will continue to pray for all of them and will be of service in any way I can. May God be with you all." Houston hip-hop artist Travis Scott is at the center of much of the legal action. Experts say his past incitement of concertgoers could make it easier to pursue negligence claims. Attorney Rick Ramos is representing more than 30 victims of Friday night's tragedy.
And this is all about accountability. If you knew and you could foresee the fact that this is going to take place, because it has happened before, and you don't do what you need to do in order to prevent it, in order to have safety measures in place, in order to assure the safety of these children and adults while they're at your concert, then you need to be held liable.
Several companies are also named in the lawsuits, including Live Nation, concert promoter Scoremore, and a nonprofit managing the venue. Over 300 people were treated at a field hospital on site, and at least 13 were hospitalized following the crowd surge. A criminal investigation is now underway, but the Houston police and fire departments were heavily involved in safety measures for the Astroworld Festival, and a local official is calling for an independent probe of the tragedy.
A settlement has been reached in a lawsuit filed against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Aaron Skuld accused the team's former minor league coach of sexual assault in 2019. The lawsuit also alleged her husband, Jared Skuld, was told to keep quiet about the allegations. And when the former assistant coach did not, he was fired. The suit also alleged the Penguins negligently retained the accused after the allegations were made. The team says officials took prompt action when informed of the accusations. Terms of the settlement were not disclosed.
Meanwhile, Carey Price is back with the Montreal Canadiens, and today the All-Star goalie revealed why he voluntarily entered the NHL's player assistance program more than a month ago. Price says, "Over the last few years, I have let myself get to a very dark place, and I didn't have the tools to cope with that struggle. Last month, I made the decision to enter a residential treatment facility for substance abuse. Things had reached a point that I realized I needed to prioritize my health for both myself and for my family." The 34-year-old says he has neglected his mental health for years, and it'll take some time to repair it. It's unclear when the Habs star will return to action.
In Ottawa, federal conservative leader Erin O'Toole unveiled his new shadow cabinet today as Parliament is set to resume in a couple of weeks.
But it's being overshadowed by who isn't in O'Toole's inner circle and why. CTV's Kevin Gallagher reports.
As official opposition leader Erin O'Toole unveiled which caucus members will have key critic roles in Parliament, he sent a message to those who have made anti-vaccine statements by leaving them off the list.
All of us have a role to play on answering questions with respect to reducing vaccine hesitancy.
Once a conservative health critic, Marilyn Gladue was not named to O'Toole's so-called shadow cabinet after the Ontario MP questioned the severity of the pandemic on CTV's Question Period, comments O'Toole called inappropriate.
In terms of the risk, people that got polio, many of them died and many of them were crippled. And that is not the same frequency of risk that we see with COVID-19.
COVID has killed more than 29,000 Canadians over the past 20 months, at least 50 times more than polio did over decades before it was eradicated through vaccination. Today, Gladue apologized. "I recognize how dangerous it is to share misinformation about the severity of COVID-19 and the safety and efficacy of vaccines. I retract these comments in full." Former conservative leadership standout Leslyn Lewis was also left outside O'Toole's inner circle after she questioned the safety of vaccines for children. And longtime MP and former international trade critic Dean Allison was also denied a role. He's against vaccine mandates and put forward a petition to have ivermectin, a drug used to treat parasites in livestock, approved to treat COVID-19. Despite repeated warnings, it's not effective or safe.
"Since getting elected, the official opposition of Canada, the Canadian Conservatives, have been fighting to get special treatment for their MPs, special treatment to sit in Parliament unvaccinated."
Though many Conservatives oppose vaccine mandates, it's unclear how many remain unvaccinated. With Parliament starting on November 22nd, Erin O'Toole insists everyone in his party who attends in person will have their shots. Kevin Gallagher, CTV News, Ottawa.
She was the first Canadian woman to die in combat. And as we lead up to Remembrance Day, there's a new tribute to Nicola Goddard.
It comes as part of a tiny tourist attraction here in Toronto, but it's hoped it will have a big impact. CTV's Austin Delaney reports.
As our fallen were repatriated, Canadians would gather along the bridges of the Highway of Heroes and pay their respects. Captain Nicola Goddard was one of those fallen soldiers. In 2006, in Afghanistan, the first Canadian woman to die in combat. Today, a bridge that was named for her along the Highway of Heroes was recreated in Little Canada, a collection of miniaturized Canadian cities. Like the real bridge, this one dedicated to Goddard's memory.
It represents Canada in all its, in everything that Canada represents. Its freedoms, its values, its traditions.
To our veterans, the bridge and Highway of Heroes means so much. And now this memory at Little Canada. They say it is an honor that it is included in the Little Canada landscape.
I served in Afghanistan, and to stand basically on the other end of that ceremony, NCR fallen, loaded onto the planes, and knowing that this is where they were coming, and knowing that Canadians were going to be there to honor them and welcome them home, and that their families were going to know that they weren't forgotten.
And as Remembrance Day approaches, the Ontario government pledging $500,000 to the True Patriot Love Foundation to help returning soldiers.
Whether it's support for group therapy or for women veterans dealing with sexual assault they experienced while abroad, we must support our veterans. And not just today or November 11th, every single day.
And while this miniature bridge is dedicated to Captain Goddard, it is in memory to all our fallen. Austin Delaney, CTV News.
Meanwhile, there will be more poignant reflections from veterans and families this Thursday. CTV's Remembrance Day special will air live from the War Memorial in Ottawa starting at 10 a.m.
And still ahead, Nobel Peace Prize-winning activist Malala Yousafzai ties the knot, how she broke the exciting news and what we know about her partner.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, we mentioned last week if you need a new car battery, it can cost you a lot more. But there is also something about new batteries you might not know. You could have to drive your car so many kilometers a month, or it could void your warranty. I'll have my report. That's just ahead.
Despite the rain that rolled through this afternoon, we remained above seasonal. Not quite as high as our norm yesterday or our temperature yesterday at 19 degrees, but we will see this trend continue at least until we get towards the end of the week. For the kids, they have the rain gear today. You can ditch that for tomorrow. Through 8 a.m., 5 degrees, generally sunny skies. A few wispy clouds roll in, but overall, a beautiful day.
We told you last week that many new vehicles require extra power, which is why some batteries for new cars can cost $300 or more.
But some batteries aren't just more expensive. You may have to actually drive your car each month to keep the battery from failing. Pat Foran has the details on Consumer Alert. Pat.
I do, Michelle and Nathan. Thank you. A Burlington man bought a new battery for his SUV earlier this year that came with a five-year warranty. But when the battery died, he was told he would have to pay for a replacement because he failed to drive 300 kilometers a month to keep it charged.
It conked out in January of this year, and I needed another one.
Stephen Copperthwaite of Burlington needed a new battery for his Mercedes SUV and had one installed for about $500. Like many people, he stayed home during the pandemic and didn't drive a lot. 9 months later, his car battery died.
We were under COVID, so we stayed at home quite a bit. And then I went to Wonderland one day with my family. And the next day it wouldn't start.
Copperthwaite had the SUV taken to his dealership and the battery was charged, but it failed again a month later and then was completely dead. Even though the battery came with a five-year warranty, he was told he was not eligible for replacement.
They said I voided the warranty by not driving enough. I was shocked.
Copperthwaite was told to check his owner's manual, which says if you use the vehicle less than 300 kilometers per month, or if it is not used for more than 3 weeks at a time, it is your responsibility to have the battery charged, checked, and corrected. Since he didn't do that, Mercedes said he would have to pay for a replacement battery. As the vehicle does not travel the required minimum of 300 kilometers a month to properly maintain the battery. Copperthwaite submitted a warranty claim, which was denied.
They showed me that they submitted the claim and Mercedes Canada denied it. It was almost like an instant rejection.
CTV News reached out to Mercedes-Benz Canada, but it had no comment on the battery issue. Copperthwaite says other car companies could have similar battery warranty policies.
Telling the public, like, you need to watch out for this.
And if you have a newer car or you recently purchased a battery, you may want to check your warranty. And if your car is not being driven often during the pandemic, you may want to take it for the occasional spin or put the battery on a trickle charger. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
They are back home after a record science mission aboard the International Space Station. Four astronauts parachuted into the Gulf of Mexico off the Florida coast last night. They arrived in darkness aboard a SpaceX capsule after an eight-hour journey. Their return capped 199 full days in orbit, the longest ever for an entire U.S.-launched crew. SpaceX will launch their replacements as early as tomorrow night.
All right, if you're heading out tonight, you might notice the umbrellas. You might also notice the way the CN Tower's lit tonight.
Look at the poppies there lit up ahead of Remembrance Day on Thursday. And the weather, you know, it's nice, especially for veterans on Remembrance Day. And so far, it's looking dry and some double digits.
Yeah, it's going to be comfortable. We won't have a brilliantly sunny day, but I will take the dry conditions as many people head out to honor our veterans. The rain we've seen roll through today hasn't really cooled us down all that much, but that will change as we head in towards the end of the week and then kicking off your weekend. Right now, across Southwestern Ontario, it's not too bad. Weather is brought to you by Train, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. Now, the weather is going to stay consistent as far as our temperatures go through the overnight, and that means that warm trend, that above-seasonal trend, is going to continue, not going anywhere. When the rain finally moves out as we head through the overnight, we will stay above-seasonal, around 4 degrees. Getting into the day tomorrow, high pressure is going to return and keep us nice and clear and fairly sunny. Before we get there, though, we are still looking at that system making its way across from BC. It is going to bring some potentially significant weather to parts of the prairies. We're looking at a number of warnings in place and watches, as well as it prompts some active weather through Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and northern Ontario. So, again, we'll keep a close eye on that. Still looking at the potential of around 40 centimeters for southern portions of Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and then northern Ontario. As we've seen, the kind of rain has trickled in late in the afternoon, and it's continued right across southwestern Ontario, and it stretches all the way from areas from around Windsor right through to about Ottawa. Now, as we head through the overnight, high pressure will continue to clear that out, and that's what's bringing the sunshine tomorrow. But we're watching an occluded front making its way across from the prairies, and that's what's going to bring active weather potentially late in the day on Thursday and then into the day on Friday. Timing everything out again as we make our way through the rest of our evening. The bulk of it is over us now with this kind of line of showers. It moves out pretty quickly, and through 10:30 p.m., the bulk of it, it's gone, continues to track its way east. Getting into the early morning hours, that's when that high pressure really starts to settle in, and we do start off fairly sunny. A few wispy clouds rolling in late in the day, but not too bad overall. It's as we get into Thursday morning, we're keeping a close eye on our conditions. Again, generally cloudy skies, and then the active weather rolls in late in the day. Now, as we head in towards really the beginning of our weekend, we're looking at that cool down rolling in. So that's that occluded front that's going to cool our temperatures right down as we head into our Thursday evening and into Friday morning, and that chance of shower is not really going anywhere. Now, as we get in towards the end of the week, that's when we watch for the showers to stick around and temperatures cooling right down. So not a bad start to the weekend, but it is going to be a little fresher than we've experienced as of late. Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Jessica. Also tonight, how Canada stacks up against other developed countries in our handling of the pandemic. From a drop in life expectancy to the number of cases and deaths.
On air, online, on every platform.
A story you'll only see here.
CTV News Toronto, winner of the RTDNA Award for Best Breaking News.
Another record has been broken.
Watch weeknights at 6.
It's a new comparison showing the pandemic's impact on dozens of countries around the world.
And while Canada is seemingly doing well on the surface, the picture is not entirely positive. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
By mid-October 2021, the world saw more than 250 million cases of COVID-19, with almost 5 million deaths from the virus. And Francesco Colombo says a significant drop in life expectancy in 24 of the OECD countries is the most dramatic illustration of the virus's impact.
One thing that really struck me is the reduction in life expectancy that we have seen in 2020 relative to 2019, which on average 0.6% years that have been reduced. For Canada, the impact has been slightly less, in the order of 0.4.
Life expectancy dropped by 1.6 years in the U.S. and 1.5 years in Spain. The report, which focuses mainly on COVID-19's impact, shows Canada well below the OECD average of almost 8,400 COVID cases per 100,000. Canada had 4,347 cases, the UK had more than 11,600, and the US had more than 13,000 cases per 100,000 population. Our ranking in COVID deaths was similar. The OECD average was more than 1,200 deaths per million population. Canada had just 699. The UK had more than 2,200. And the US had more than 1,800 deaths per million.
In terms of the pandemic, some of the indicators are fairly good for Canada.
But Colombo warns Canada does have a weak area in terms of healthcare workers.
The pandemic has highlighted as needed further investments. One is the health workforce. We know that health workers have been on their knees in a number of countries, burnt out with high level of stress and mental health.
And mental health problems soared during the pandemic, with anxiety and depression reported at twice the pre-pandemic levels in most countries, especially Mexico, the UK, and the US. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Malala Yousafzai had a big announcement today. The Nobel Prize laureate is married. The 24-year-old human rights activist posted photos on social media of the celebration with Asr Malik and her family. The groom works in the sports world for the Pakistan Cricket Board. Yousafzai says a small wedding was held at home in Birmingham, England, with their families. She survived an attack by the Taliban in 2012, continuing a passionate campaign for girls' education. A British tabloid began its appeal today of a ruling that it invaded the privacy of the Duchess of Sussex. Meghan sued the publisher of the Mail on Sunday. It printed parts of a letter she wrote to her estranged father. Earlier this year, the judge ruled in her favor without a trial and said the paper should pay her legal bills. The tabloid insists the judge should not have treated the letter as an intimate communication.
An Egyptian-Canadian author is this year's winner of the Scotiabank Giller Prize. Omar El Akkad was awarded the $100,000 honor for his book, What Strange Paradise.
Such an incredible honor, and not one that I was able to think of in anything but the most abstract way leading up to it.
El Akkad says he shares the win with his family. The book follows two children caught in the global refugee crisis. The Giller jury says the book offers clues as to how people might reach out empathetically in a divided world. He was a top Hollywood child actor who gained new success later in life. Dean Stockwell has passed away. The 85-year-old died at home on Sunday of natural causes. Stockwell received an Oscar nomination for Married to the Mob and Emmy nominations for Quantum Leap, for which he won a Golden Globe. Stockwell racked up 200 credits in a career that spanned seven decades. Among his many roles, a memorable performance in David Lynch's Blue Velvet.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. Need a break? We've got you covered with a full night of great shows. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
There needs to be very clear guidelines about who should be getting these passes, and if you're not using it on a near regular basis, odds are you shouldn't be getting one at all.
Updating our top stories, Toronto's Parking Authority is facing scrutiny over lifetime parking passes for certain employees. Some say the reward is deserved, while others are calling for the taxpayer-funded perk to be cut.
It makes me worry, you know, for my kids or for anybody's kids, really.
Police are urging people to be careful about a suspicious man approaching teen girls near Birchmount and Danforth. Police say the man's been approaching the girls and asking them to get in his vehicle. Several incidents have been reported over the past 2 months.
We're just right now not on the trajectory that we want to stay, because right now we have a doubling time of 17 days, meaning if this continues like that, 500 cases per day right now on average will become about 1,000 cases per day in about 2.5 weeks from now.
COVID-19 case counts are rising in Ontario again. Now, some local health units are reintroducing certain health measures in an effort to limit the possibility of another lockdown.
Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
In business, the soaring cost of living and the world's largest economy will be in focus for the markets. Greg Bunnell from BNN Bloomberg has those details.
Soaring consumer prices will be top of mind for investors in the morning. The latest read on American inflation will land before the markets open and is expected to be a scorcher. Economists are penciling in a 5.9% year-over-year rise in U.S. consumer prices for October. Now, the great debate in the markets is whether price pressures will ease over time. If inflation remains elevated, central banks may be forced into raising borrowing costs more aggressively than they're forecasting. Bitcoin is hitting new highs amid a broad-based rally in cryptocurrencies. It's never easy to attribute moves in the crypto world to just one thing, but there's some thinking investors are viewing the likes of Bitcoin and Ether as hedges against inflation. And it can't hurt that Apple CEO Tim Cook says he personally owns some cryptocurrency. General Electric is splitting into three companies, spelling the end of a conglomerate that was once the world's most valuable firm. GE's health, energy, and aviation businesses will all become separate companies over the next couple of years. In some ways, it's the end of an era for corporate America, which was defined by conglomerates for much of the 20th century. Well, the Canadian dollar was up one basis point to 80.37 U.S. American benchmark oil gained more than $2 a barrel to close at 84.15. Alberta's heavy crude, Western Canadian Select, was up 227 to settle at 64.43 U.S. And the TSX Composite Index gained 38 points to close at a new high of 21,594, with technology and mining stocks leading the way higher. That's the latest from BNN Bloomberg. I'm Greg Bunnell.
Air Canada's CEO has hired a private tutor in order to learn French. Michael Rousseau came under fire last week after he told journalists he's been able to live in Montreal without speaking the language. Rousseau was later forced to apologize. Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland has written a letter to Air Canada's board of directors asking that Rousseau's French language skills be a determining factor in his annual performance evaluation. Despite a rise in COVID-19 cases, Ontario's health minister says the government isn't changing course on its reopening plan.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Beatrice Vaisman. Reshmi, you've got a panel of medical experts to weigh in.
Yes, Michelle, it is news you can use. We're going to talk about how we get off the wrong track as we sustain this fourth wave. So stay tuned for that conversation with some medical experts on how we can make sure our personal responsibilities are met and we don't spread COVID-19.
And Beatrice, you'll be speaking with a 16-year-old from Simcoe who's now home safe after attending the Astroworld Festival.
That's right, Nathan. His name is Evan Pond, and he'll talk to us about jumping on a flight down to Houston, Texas for his first concert in 2 years. But it didn't take long for this massive celebration of music to turn into, for many, a struggle simply to survive. So Evan's got some mental anguish from being there. He's got some images. He tells me he simply can't shake. So he'll recount his story, and we'll also talk to a journalist from the New York Times about the latest in the investigation down in Houston.
All right. Thank you, Beatrice and Reshmi. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
Just ahead, we know the original is priceless, but what is a 400-year-old copy of the Mona Lisa worth? The answer after the break.
Tonight, two families, one heartbreaking mix-up.
It's a truly impossible nightmare.
Giving birth to a stranger's child. A moment of joy forever tainted by a fertility clinic error. Later on CTV National News.
CTV News at 6 podcast is available as a download every weeknight. And you can also listen to the show live on News Talk 1010.
Get Toronto's top stories, breaking news alerts, and watch live. Download the CTV News app.
Coming up on CP24 tonight. COVID counts rise. Will capacity limits be scaled back to prevent another wave? Our medical experts join live. And Drake speaks out what the Toronto rapper said about the Astroworld tragedy. A closer look at today's top stories tonight at 7 on CP24.
It's a discovery that's astounding archaeologists. A 2,700-year-old Assyrian wine press factory has been discovered in northern Iraq. The site is made up of 14 basins carved into the stone of a mountainside. They're connected to each other through small canals.
One of the world's most recognizable portraits sold for more than $242,000 at a Paris auction today. But it's not the real McCoy. This is a copy of Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa. The auction house estimates it dates back to around 1600. In June, a European collector bought another 17th century copy of the painting for over $4 million. That's a record for a reproduction of the work. The original can be found in the Louvre Museum.
Meanwhile, one of the first computers ever made by Apple is going up for auction, and it could sell for hundreds of thousands. Only 200 models of the Apple I were ever made. They were designed by Steve Wozniak and assembled and tested by Steve Jobs himself. The Apple I has a special wood casing, and it's undergone an extensive restoration process. A similar model was sold at an auction in Germany for $671,000.
In Wales, a man trapped in a cave for more than 2 days has been rescued.
Well, it was certainly a very long rescue. It was quite cold a lot of the time, but we were highly motivated.
A team of almost 300 people worked to free the man after he fell into the cave. He spent 54 hours down there before being pulled out in what was described as a very difficult operation. The man in his 40s is believed to have suffered a broken jaw and leg as well as spinal injuries, but doctors say he's recovering well.
All right, back to the forecast. Jessica, looks like rain is the story tonight.
It is. It's going to stick around as we head towards the early evening and through the overnight. But the good news, it moves rather quickly, and it is going to continue to track east and out of Toronto and really through much of the GTA. But as we head into the day tomorrow, we are looking at the sunshine returning thanks to some high pressure. We remain above seasonal. Remembrance Day, more in the way of some cloud cover, but really not a bad day as we take in many of the ceremonies right across the province. And in towards the weekend, we see that little bit of a cool down. The shift begins on Friday, and that's how we stay as we head in towards Saturday and Sunday. So a little cooler, but closer to seasonal. Nathan.
All right. Thanks, Jessica. Be sure to join Pauline Chan later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Jessica Smith and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.